Greg, you know, I think I'd have to go back and watch all of the segments you did on our Hockey Central trade deadline show yesterday with Gord Stellick to try to find out where the exact moment was. I might have to go frame by frame and try to isolate where the exact moment was when Greg Wyshynski officially became part of mainstream media.
Please.
That's right. No longer can you hold your cynical little purview looking down on everyone who works in mainstream media, the enemy of bloggers and Twitterers everywhere on the internet. Now, Greg Wyshynski, you're one of us.
I have,
officially, yesterday, Greg Wyshynski became one of us and came over to the dark side.
I have ample
side of mainstream media.
Ample evidence to the contrary, sir. One, I was never on the main panel. Two, I was clearly comic relief. Three, I don't believe that any member of the mainstream media on a trade deadline show ever was told by a staff member of said network to change his or her pants during the program. Now, I know what my mistake there is. I said his or her when trade deadline is the preeminent sausage fest in Canada. I mean, it was like Bratwurst City in this joint yesterday in Sportsnet.
Yesterday at the green room, and did you not look around and say, geez, this is a lot of swinging rope right here.
It's a lot of swinging
smoke. Rope there. Rope everywhere. Oh, man.
And more Caucasians than you'd find at an Enya concert as well.
as you pointed out yesterday, a lot of white dudes looking at their Blackberries.
No, I think I still retain my street cred. The Millbury scales, punk rock, and I made a sexting joke. And
you did it on TV on a very mainstream sports property in Canada.
That's true.
You know what? And I think now that I think about it, the moment where it actually happened was when Deb Berman, our stylist, said, Greg, we need to change your pants, and you agreed.
Mm.
That was the moment you said, okay, I am willing to conform to how mainstream media behaves. This is how I'm going to act, and I'm going to look like one of them. I'm going to be on their show, and I'm going to let them change how I look.
Conform.
Dude, welcome aboard.
So you're saying
media.
I should have fought the pants war, in other words. I should have battled back and said, no, you're not taking my pants. I'm a member of the alternative media. How dare you try to make me fit into your corporate pants? How dare you make me conform to the man?
Yeah, and you did.
Yeah.
And you loved it. Admit it, Wish. You loved getting into
those
pants.
I hate slacks.
Those were nice pants.
No, the ultimate insult was, so the reason, so for people who don't know, so me and Gord Stellick did about four or five hits yesterday on the Sportsnet Trade Center deadline, whatever you call it, thing. And we bought the Millbury scaled television, which was awesome. We did Six Degrees of Brad May, which was awesome. In which, it's like the Kevin Bacon game, except instead of connecting Brad May from player to player, it was like, okay, Brad, connect yourself to Marion Gaborik. Well, you know, we both shared the same barber once, and you know, I remember one time he stayed at my house, but he never paid for the electricity. Like, it's that kind of thing. It was great and folksy and awesome. We did some other stuff too, but midway through the day, I was told that I had to change my pants. I was wearing these brown khakis, and the lady, Deb Berman said that I had to change my pants because in HD. They were atrocious. She was dancing around the word, but I think she wanted to use the word nauseating. Here's what your old boy Greg Wyshynski sounded like on the Sportsnet trade deadline extravaganza, Hockey Central trade deadline day, presented by Coors Light. Here's a little bit of me and Stellick.
Gord Stellick, Greg Wyshynski, Puck Daddy, Stellictricity. Back to you, Darren Millard.
Yeah, congratulations. Not everybody gets to bring their son and work together on trade deadline day.
Those two guys have fashion tips.
Really?
We had breaking news just earlier. This happened right here on Hockey Central Connected. Puck Daddy, the change of pants as you look. Brown corduroy slacks last time when he came in, taken off the air. Deborah Berman said right away, let's change to the dress slacks. Here it is. Puck Daddy, like a concussion, you're taken to a quiet room there, a quiet place with Deborah to figure things out.
This was tough. As you can see, my beautiful baby diarrhea colored pants were on display. I tried to make the argument that I should keep them. She would not listen to any of it. I am very upset, as you can see in this photograph, about changing out for the gray slacks. But at the end of the day, sir, I am not Mika Kiprasov. I cannot refuse a trade and change the course of history. I had to acquiesce and throw on the gray socks.
So what did she say? Like, you were trying to get the Georgetown preppy look, like working at the White House, but she said they look like Colonel Mustard with a wrench or something like that?
Evidently, in HD television, they were heinous. They were like yellow and disgusting. So I apologize to all the HD viewers for my pants before.
Well, and of course, we promised Deborah she wasn't going to be on air there, so we lied to her about that. But we talk about the Milbury scale. How did you rate the change in wardrobe for Puck Daddy?
That's one head. That's mutually beneficial to myself for getting a nice, beautiful pair of slacks, and also the viewers at home who don't have to see baby diarrhea pants anymore.
Now, keep in mind, at this point in the program, nothing had happened in trade deadline day. I believe the Rob Flick trade had happened, and then that was it. So I didn't feel bad about wasting everybody's time talking about my wardrobe. Later on in the day, there were more pertinent things to talk about. But yeah, that was Pantsgate. And it became like a thing on Twitter, too. It became a thing where people were discussing my pants. Like you, there were some people who thought I should have fought for the honor of my pants, and others felt that maybe it was time to change your pants. You know, everybody had their own opinion.
Even the Los Angeles Kings Twitter feed tweeted about your pants.
Yes.
I'm sure you noticed that yesterday.
Yeah,
the Kings were picking up what was happening with Greg Wyshynski's choice of pants.
What was your favorite part? While I was down in the bowels of Sportsnet doing the bits and doing the Milbury scale and stuff, you pulled double duty. You did the GM's room did the player's room. And how did that go? What was your highlight of the day, sir?
The highlight for me was when we had Marty McSorley and Wendell Clark. By the way, if you go to sportsnet.ca, all the strategy room hits that we did yesterday, I think it was like 10 of them, maybe even 12, are all there. So you can see everything that we're talking about, whether it's, you know, trades or stories, anecdotes, whatever, they're all up there. My favorite was when we had Marty McSorley and Wendell Clark in the strategy room, and we rolled the viz of their famous fight, May 17th, 1993, and both of them talked about it. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that's some really compelling television. We have an event, and you have the two participants from that event talk about it from their point of view. And just hearing Marty talk to Wendell and Wendell talk to Marty about what was happening at that moment, and what happened in that fight, to me, that was the highlight, because you never get that. Like, when have you seen two fighters or two guys from an incident sit there on a hockey panel and talk about it?
To me, that
was good. And you know what, man, Marty was really good yesterday. Marty, for the first time, because he never likes talking about it, he hates talking about it. We were sitting around the boardroom and we're like, Marty was going to talk about, we're going to do something with the night the lights went out in Boston and he was playing for the Oilers. And he said, well, you know, it'd be a better story, Jeff. I said, what's that, Marty? He goes, why don't I just talk about the stick? People have wanted to hear it from me for a long time. Why don't I just do it? So we talked about the illegal stick in the 1993 Stanley Cup final. And Marty never talks about that.
Never.
And he pointed out all the guys in the Kings that had illegal sticks in that third period. Luke Robitaille, Alexei Zhitnik, like right down Daryl Sador, like all the guys. He said there was about six guys that still had illegal sticks in the third. He just happened to be the one that got pinched.
He got a little conspiratorial though during that. You know, he was just like, for a while, I was envisioning bookshelves filled with Catcher in the Rye behind Marty as he was talking. It was like this whole thing about it. They all know they're illegal, but nobody tells. And someone must have ratted me out. And it was a rat. Wow. And they showed that great highlight of him going crazy in the penalty box too. Oh, it was great.
Terry Fraser. But the thing about that was at the forum at that time, I mean, a number of things. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens trainers took the entire LA Kings stick rack and wheeled it into the dressing room to measure blades. That's pretty much, you know, that's not like, that's pretty much fact now. That's gone past like conspiracy. We all know that happened. Plus, all the lockers in the visiting dressing room, by the way, at that point, only, you weren't allowed to put your own lock on them. It was only Montreal Canadiens locks you could use for the locker. How about that? For every team.
Conspiracy. Well, overall, what did you think of the deadline? Now I compared it to the Avengers on Puck Daddy on the report card that I wrote, in the sense that the beginning of the Avengers was very tedious. It was Loki going around with his pokey stick and hypnotizing people to join his army. But then nobody remembers that because the rest of the movie kicks so much ass. This deadline, I think, will go down as being one of the more chaotic ones that we've had. The Gabrick trade came out of nowhere. Buffalo doing their sell-off. It will be seen, I think, in its totality, because I don't think that you can separate the trades that we had a few days ago from the trades that we had yesterday. So I think if you factor in the Iginla thing, factor in Jágr to the Bruins, along with everything else, it was a hell of a deadline.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the fact that it was slow, I mean, was great for me because essentially we used a strategy room to tap dance while nothing was happening. So we had all the general managers and players in there telling great stories. So I kind of dug the morning because I got to do stuff. It was like later on in the afternoon where you went to main panel and the breaking news panel that I just kind of vanished off the program. It's like the last hour and a half of our Hockey Central trade deadline coverage was sans strategy room. And I really didn't do anything other than, you know, record a couple of things for our news program. Oh, it's good to see Theo Fleury yesterday, too. Did you catch up with Theo?
I did not.
He came in to do a couple of hits. Yeah, so Theo came in to do a couple of shots with us in the strategy room as well. So it was, if I weren't directly involved with it or I didn't have something like the strategy room to watch, it would have been an excruciating morning. Like, things really didn't pick up until, I think the first trade was, what, 12:40?
Mm-hmm.
Eastern, and then really picked up from about 2 to 3 o'clock. There was that flurry of stuff that all sort of started to come in. So really, it was like a 1 hour.
Yeah.
It was, you know what? It was like soccer. You know, like the first, like almost all the game was just sort of, you know, boring and tedious. And then right towards the end, one team's up a goal or down a goal, and you get a sort of flurry as the team tries to tie it or tries to win it. That's right. Kind of what it was like for me.
Well, it was like watching soccer in the Netherlands, a bunch of white guys. Doing exactly what you said.
We're a lot of white guys. A lot of white guys.
Question of the day is, of course, your winners and losers for the NHL trade deadline 2013. It's interesting how much can change in three periods. I think before the New York Rangers took the ice last night, a lot of people would have put them in the loser bracket based on the Gabrick trade, based on Klo overpaying for him, based on Klo not having scored a goal. Then they play a game. Ryan Klo becomes like Keith Primo in the playoffs, and all of a sudden everybody's like, Glenn Sather, let me bathe your feet, you genius of a man.
Derek Brassard heats up,
right?
Starts filling in that one game sample. Let's see, but that's a good example, by the way, by mentioning Keith Primo, because if you look at one player that you think Ryan Klo can become,
yeah,
it's probably that guy.
Totally.
You know, he's not pretty to watch get around the ice. He does get around, you know, he does get up and down the ice, but it's still not pretty to watch. But big body, you know, he'll be a good playoff guy. It's always, you know, you look for reasons why things went sour in a market, and you know, Ryan Klo had been dropped off the top lines, found his minutes reduced. You know, rumors that he had fallen out of favor with Joe Thornton, who was very much in command of that San Jose Sharks dressing room. He's the one guy that, you know, whose career really did need a lick of paint. And if you look at the way Glenn Sather has always behaved, Glenn Sather, I mean, all general managers are guilty of this to some extent, but Glenn Sather, more than any general manager, Greg, in the National Hockey League, is in love with the reclamation project.
Yeah.
I can make this guy better. He's underperforming here. I know I can make him better. And hey, one game sample so far, true slots.
Yeah.
You've made Ryan Klo a better player.
And the move that now, well, here's the thing about Sather. He's always been okay on trades. Not so good on free agency is sort of my thing that I've seen. You know, you sign Scott Gomez and then you flip him for Ryan McDonough, that kind of situation. So it's interesting to see how that works out. Obviously, a little more interesting for me is whether or not Gabrick finds his game, because everything you described as far as the dropping down the lines and the reduced ice time, the whole bit, is Gabrick. And his time in New York was done. And now we're going to see whether or not his time as an elite player is done, or if it just was a situation where he needed a change of scenery. I think it's a change of scenery thing. I think this guy still has something left. That's going to be the key for this trade. We got John Davidson coming up in a few minutes to talk about this trade and other deadline situations, including the Steve Mason trade to Philadelphia. We've had discussions on this show before about whether Columbus owed it to its fans to go for it, or whether it owed it to its fans to rebuild in a smart way. This is a going for a trade, and obviously that means I'm in favor of it. What do you think of the trade from a Columbus perspective?
I didn't think that they should quote unquote go for it, because I thought if they went for it, it would cost them one of the three first round picks that they have this year.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that Kekalainen and JD were able to, nudge the needle forward. And they have a bad schedule, man. Like, they have all those road games to end the season. It's going to be tough sledding for the Columbus Blue Jackets, make no mistake about it. But the fact that they are able to budge their team forward, re-inspire their fan base with some of these moves, and not sacrifice one of their three first-round picks, I'm in favor of it.
Yeah.
I like it. It wasn't working with Brassard in Columbus. John Moore, I thought, should have been a better defenseman by this time in his, you know, in his pro career and his learning curve in the pro ranks. Derek Dorsett, they're going to love in New York. He's not playing this year, but he'll be back next season coming off an injury. He'll be like a Brandon Prust type folk hero, for the New York Rangers. So it's, this one to me kind of looks like a win-win for both teams. You're right. Gabrick wasn't working with John Tortorella. And so they sent some players to join their old captain in New York and Rick Nash.
That's interesting about the Dorsett thing. Is he out for this year, or is there a chance he can come back?
No, I think he's done for the year.
Interesting. All right, we're gonna get to the beginning of the show. But again, you send us your winners and losers, puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com, @WyshynskiHFMerrick on Twitter, #NVSW. I am actually in a beautiful studio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Merrick is at the Stouffville Estate.
Thank you.
He had some stuff to take care of. And on behalf of both of us, listen, it was a long deadline. And Merrick, my boy, has worked very, very hard. Do not take out your aggressions on him for us not doing a drunk podcast last night. It's a lot of work.
There was no way I'd be able to have my eyelids open for a drunk podcast,
exactly,
considering the amount of work we've had to do lately. So don't worry. Hey, folks. There will be plenty of drunk podcasts on the horizon here. Don't worry. Alcohol's not going anywhere, and neither are me and Greg.
All right, with that, we will start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg. Right away, your BF detector should go off. Why do I know this crap? Are you insane?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar.
La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just what we need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
Indeed.
Hey,
indeed, indeed, indeed.
Mark Erickson says Doris can be back for the playoffs.
Playoffs?
That to me is a little surprising, considering it was a broken collarbone in, I want to say, what, the second week of March?
Playoffs?
I was told done for the year.
Total perfect guy for that Rangers team, by the way. I mean, if you talk about all the sandpaper that walked out the door with guys like Dubinsky and especially with Prust.
Yeah.
Dorsett's that guy. I actually love Dorsett. That's a guy I'm surprised that JD and Kekalainen decided to give away in this trade. But I guess you got to give to get, right? So Dorsett out the
favorite,
door.
My favorite Derek Dorsett moment when Taylor Hall fought him. And Doris was like, kid, you really don't want to do this. I mean, and Hall ended up injuring his ankle in the fight. But you could tell Doris, it was like, I could really mess you up here. I'm still gonna beat you in the fight, but I'm not going to really mess you up. And he's kind of like, really, kid, you really don't want to do this. I know you're angry at me right now, but you really don't want to do this. One of the most hilarious moments in Derek Dorsett's career. So that's when I think of Derek Dorsett, I always think of that incident with Taylor Hall.
Indeed. JD coming up, by the way. Winners and losers for me. I put the Jackets as a winner. I mean, overall, I still think Pittsburgh is a winner, even though things aren't exactly going as well for the Penguins as expected.
Happened last night.
Yeah, Jesus. Come back,
Sid. What happened last night?
Come back, Sid, please. I would also say that a couple of the teams that stood pat were winners, Montreal being one of them. I think Montreal didn't need to add anything to their mix. I think the people in the room are the ones that got them there. No reason to shake it up if you don't need to, or overpay for anything if you don't need to.
You know what I thought they should have done? There's one guy out there that I could have seen the Montreal Canadiens going out to get, and it is in the spirit of Brandon Prust as well. Eric Nystrom from the Dallas Stars, who is poised to become a UFA, unless there's a contract extension sort of on the horizon or close that we don't know about. He was one of those guys that Dallas needed to make the decision on. I'm kind of surprised that the Habs, maybe they did, and maybe the ask back was too much. I'm surprised they didn't go out and get this specific player, Eric Nystrom.
My F that I gave out on the report card last night was for the Detroit Red Wings. PG Marsh writes in, Your F for Detroit was a good bit of trolling. You're wrong when you suggest the Wings are still in win-now mode. Am I? I mean, am I wrong that they're still in win-now mode?
As long as Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Franzen are still there, they're in win-now.
Like you have to understand that, like, it's hard for me to accept that the notion that the Wings are not in win-now mode when they were in on Bouwmeester and when they were in on Jager.
And in on Ryan Suter in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm sorry. That's a good spin when you don't get the guys you're going after. But looking at the birth certificates for Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Franzen and some of the other players on this team, the window is still there. And the idea that they've transitioned to some sort of a rebuild on the fly right now, I don't buy it. I don't. They struck out. They deserve an F. They have to improve their blue line if they're going to contend, and they didn't. So I hate to be harsh about it because I love Kenny Holland, but Jesus. Out of all the teams in this league that needed to do something at the deadline, they're the team, and they didn't. And if they missed the playoffs, it's because of that.
Were you like me? Did you think that, you know, at the final hour, at 2:59, we're going to get an announced trade between Edmonton and Detroit, and Ryan Whitney would have a new home?
Whitney? Hey, listen, I think Edmonton succeeding as they did late in that campaign as we got closer to the trade deadline screwed a lot of teams up. And I think Detroit's one of them. Because I think Hemsky's going there if the Edmonton Oilers are out of contention at that point.
I kind of had Hemsky going to Boston.
Hemsky's going somewhere. Now, maybe he ain't going to Detroit because they don't want to ante up for him. But the bottom line is that I think that, again, this notion that they weren't, that all of a sudden it's like rebuild on the fly, or, you know, they want to, they were going for players. They just didn't have the assets to get them. That's a scary thought. That's a scary thought. It's the same thing with the Devils. Devils needed to improve. Their offense stinks. They went out and got Steve Sullivan. Great. Another rehash. But they don't have the assets to trade.
That was Lou Lamoriello getting his Jim Rutherford on. You can always come back. You can come back to Carolina. You can come back.
Lou's always like that.
Steve Sullivan.
I mean, he's as much a recycler as anybody. But yeah, I mean, those two teams, again, it's, they don't have the assets to trade. Maybe they didn't want to go all in and try to improve. I don't know. But the Red Wings needed to improve.
Here's a question for you. Which player were you surprised didn't move? Because to me, Whitney is one of them. Eric Nystrom is another one. And there was a lot of noise about, and even though he has two more years left on term, and I think $3 million a copy, I'm surprised that Antoine Vermette is still a Coyote.
Vermette's an interesting one.
A lot of teams that wanted Vermette.
Of the teams that were selling, I would say that Drew Stafford would be the one that I was surprised by. I'm frankly surprised Pominville moved before Stafford did, to be honest with you. Because Pominville is such the not part of the problem guy, you know?
Yeah.
And Stafford, I think, was an asset that you could move. But that's a...
Love what Buffalo got in return.
Dude, that's the crazy thing about the Buffalo Sabres, the deadline. Like, by all accounts, that's the last deadline Regeer will have. Although I did some radio in Buffalo today, and there seems to be a prevailing wisdom that Regeer might be still in place to try to turn this thing around, which is idiotic, in my opinion.
Did you guys mention Rick Dudley at all?
I mentioned Rick Dudley. Didn't get any traction.
Right.
But I think that could be a possibility, right?
That's just for the MVSW listeners to stick in their back pocket and bring it out when it happens, if it happens.
But if that was his swan song, good on him. He did good. He got a lot back for Pominville. He got a lot back for Regeer and for Leopold. He didn't go down the Ryan Miller route. I did good. He did good. Yeah. Speaking of another guy who did good, I think at least. Time will tell.
Yeah.
He is he's the president of the Columbus Blue Jackets and a favorite on this very podcast. Joining the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast, it is John Davidson. Hello, John. How are you?
Guys, good, thank you. How are you guys?
We're good.
Oh, well.
As you should be, sir, for making our trade deadline exciting. Because it kind of stunk for a while. And then you go off and trade for Marian Gaborik. How did this trade come about? How long were you guys looking at Gaborik, or did this thing come around kind of quickly?
Kind of quickly. The day before the trade deadline, we had some discussions on different ideas with the Rangers, and, you know, you're tossing here and there, and, you know, it's kind of like a salad trying to figure things out. And next thing you know, we got onto Gaborik a little bit, and they didn't want to move him unless the package was right, and finally we figured out for the two sides what the package should be, and I think the Rangers are going to do well, and hopefully the Blue Jackets are going to do well. It should be a good trade for both clubs.
John, as we all know, every general manager, we talked about this on Hockey Central last night during our marathon trade deadline coverage, every general manager has other favorite general managers that he likes doing business with, and perhaps more than that, really trusts. And it seems as if, you know, the battery lately, you look at the Rick Nash deal, Columbus and the New York Rangers have a really nice thing going by way of trade. But with realignment, that all changes next year. Do you think that, you know, when realignment hits, you know, that sort of trading love affair between these two squads is over?
That's a good question and a fair question. I think even us trading the goaltender Mason to Philadelphia could, you know, could help Philadelphia next year if he rekindles things. And that's what makes this whole thing a lot interesting and very interesting. And, I don't know, you know, you kind of look at deals that are going to help you. For us, we've got a goaltender and Bobrovsky was playing real well. We've got a deep team on the blue line. We've used 11 different defensemen this season with injuries. And every one of them, including John Moore, who we traded, have played well for us. But we also needed some offense. And we had to give to get, so we worked on the Gaborik thing. And he's pretty excited to be here, which is really good to hear, and I'm happy with that. But as far as trading, I'm always a believer in just trying to do what you do for your own team. And if it's a partner that's down the road, it's a partner that's down the road. You don't see it a lot, but it may happen again. You just don't know.
There weren't a lot of NHL player for NHL player moves yesterday, and I thought one of the benefits of the Gaborik trade was it really gave you and your GM a chance to clear out some roster spaces and start molding and shaping this thing into how you see it. Was that one of the more attractive aspects of this trade as well?
I think when you look at our team, we've played pretty well, and we're maximizing it on how we've played. We played hard all year. We're getting wins finally, which is a good thing. And we're seeing where our strengths are and where our depth is. And when we look at this thing, we know we have to try to improve certain areas. We certainly have three first-rounders coming up in the draft. You never know if we're going to pick three guys or you make a deal or you do something. I don't know. Regarding, you know, real star players going from teams this year, there's just too many teams that are still in the hunt. That's the biggest thing. And there's too many contracts that are long-term contracts. So it's hard to facilitate those types of deals. However, just in looking at our team and getting Gaborik, we look at it that here's a player that can help us right now score some goals. Here's a guy that's going to be with us next year, so it's not a rental. And then at the same time, when you look what we moved to New York with Dorsett, he's hurt with a fractured collarbone, a really good guy, a hard player. We moved John Moore, who was not in our top six, that may develop into a player that certainly could be. I like him. And then we've got Brassard. So we took Brassard out of our lineup, our every night lineup, and put Gaborik in. And Gabrick's played with Prospo. He's played with Anisimov on the same line in the past. So we're comfortable with doing that. You got to give to get. I know the guys played very well last night for the Rangers. I'm happy for them. But we just got to take care of our own business.
You know, Brassard's an interesting one as well. And does the fact that it looks like Boone Jenner is going to be an NHLer sooner than later, does that make it easier to trade a player like Derek Brassard?
No, it doesn't. With Boone, he's had a great year playing in Oshawa. They're still playing. He's always been thought of as a really good defensive center, defensive forward. Skating had to get better, and it has, and I give him full marks for that. Scoring has certainly blossomed, but I give him real full marks for that. But you don't know when his time's going to come. We hope it's upcoming for him next season, but you just don't know. With Brassard, it was more of we had to make a deal if we were going to add a top six forward. They're hard to find, and knowing that Gaborik, you know, has had history with our people, it's just one of those things we got to give to get, and then we've got to work on continuing to fill the spots. The other thing was with Brassard going out of the lineup, Dubinsky comes back in tonight. So does Nick Foligno. So we've got two healthy bodies coming in and helping us too. So it's all part of the parcel as you try to work your way through this puzzle.
What did you see on Gaborik that convinced you that maybe a change of scenery is all this guy needs?
Well, just history. I mean, we look at his numbers. He's a real good goal scorer. I mean, he's something we don't have. He's an explosive skater. I know this year he's had a harder time in New York, not had the success he normally has. He's played a lot of left side. I know he likes to play the right side, even though he's a left-handed shot. And again, he's had some success with Anisimov and Prospo. So with that being said, we're trying to help our team. We're trying to find goals. We're trying to find goals for now and in the future. And that's basically it in a nutshell. Not much more than that.
John, you mentioned a couple of seconds ago the three first-rounders you have in this year's NHL entry draft. Were those sacred cows? Were those hands-off? Or for the right return, would you have parted with one of those?
No. I mean, I always often look at it, and I always say this all the time. Wayne Gretzky got traded. Mark Messier got traded. Anybody or anything can get traded. And it's not an enjoyable time by any means. I mean, I was a player that was traded, but it was during the summer for me, which was different from St. Louis to the Rangers way, way back. But I think with first-round picks, what happens with us with the three, it's not necessarily three players. It gives you options come draft time. Do you move two of them for somebody? Do you move one of them for somebody? Do you move two of them to move to a certain spot to get the player you want? Do you move one of them and get 2 seconds instead of a first? There's a million things you can look at with that. And so what it did with us when we didn't see anything that was going to be real helpful long term is we retained the three. We now have a great chance to go into the draft, at the very least get three good prospects, as opposed to not having those options available to us because we have three. So that's still wide open for us, which is a good thing.
So Steve Mason, you trying to punish him by sending him to Philly? He's a goalie with a confidence problem. You sent him to Philadelphia, John.
Listen, I played in New York. It's right down the street. I had a good talk with Steve yesterday. He's a good kid. He's a big monster of a guy. He needed to get to a fresh place, a fresh start. And one thing we talked about is when you're in the Midwest in cities like St. Louis and Columbus, it's a different lifestyle. It's a quieter lifestyle. People aren't as outward with their emotions as they are on the East Coast. I remember going to the Rangers and playing well, and people loved you. They were going to adopt you. And then when you didn't play well, they were going to throw you off the George Washington Bridge. And there's not much in between. But you got to learn to deal with it. And the athletes that have gone into New York or Philadelphia that can embrace that attitude and live with it have gone on to have great careers. Others crumble. They can't handle the pressure and the way of life in those areas. Me, I think it's fantastic. I loved my time there. It was an outstanding place to be. Outstanding place to be. And so for Mace, it's a fresh start. I talked to him about exactly what to expect, and I hope he does well because he's a really good kid.
John, put on your goalie's hat here for a second. What do you see right now in Sergei Bobrovsky? Why is it working for him now?
He's driven, really driven, and driven more than most I've ever seen. You know, I in the broadcasting world, I was around Hasek a lot, driven goaltender, around Mike Richter a lot. When all my years with the Rangers, I was there for his whole career. Driven, just driven. Patrick Roy was driven. I was around him a lot. Yeah, amongst others, of course. But Bobrovsky's right there with that drive. He's a guy that really wants to do well. There's zero maintenance with him. Accepts coaching well. Works. Days off, he'll come into the arena and still work. After games, rides a bike. In fact, you have to go get him off the bike because we have to go to the airport, jump on a plane to get to the next city. So I like that. He understands the game. He reads the game. He's got good rebound control. It's just a little bit of everything. I mean, he's just had a great year for us. And, you know, the biggest thing for him is just to learn to get experience, to learn to do it night after night, and continue just being who he is. I remember earlier this season, I believe it was his first NHL shutout where he was great at home. He went into the locker room after the game and thanked the players instead of the players thanking him. That's just the type of attitude he has. We're really, really lucky to have him around.
Yeah, John, you mentioned Dominik Hasek a second ago, and the one thing I always think about with Hasek outside of, you know, what he did during gameplay was at practice. He's still a goaltender who hated to be beat in practice. He did not like surrendering goals during the games or during practice. Does Bobrovsky have some of that in him? What's he like as a practice goalie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he practices hard every night. So that makes him better because of the way he practices. It also makes shooters better because it's hard to score, and you got to work to beat him. I remember Hasek did a playoff game in Ottawa with Buffalo one night for the network, and I counted his shots against. I think, if I remember correctly, he had something like 185 shots in warm-up, and he stopped like 182 of them.
Wow.
I mean, jeez. He just chased everything, and that's just how he demanded excellence of himself. That's why Dominik Hasek had the career he had. There was no easy way out. He just did it everything the right way and the hard-working way. And that's a good lesson for young goaltenders. You think you work hard? Nah. Go watch some of these guys work. You'll see what working hard is.
Indeed. Last one for me. You know, we've debated on the podcast before the direction of the Blue Jackets and how they should approach being this close to a playoff seed. And I guess the question is, did you feel like, you know, you come to this team, you had such a reputation in St. Louis about reaching out, mending bridges with the fan base and that kind of thing, getting people excited about the franchise. And imagine the same mandate is in Columbus as well. Did you feel that this Gabrick thing was important in the sense that it kind of shows the fans the level of commitment for your regime and how important it is to make the playoffs versus, you know, some sort of long-term planning kind of thing?
Certainly can't promise the playoffs, but it did not hurt our long-term planning. We still are who we are. We are what we are. We're still looking at the draft. We're still looking at our young prospects. We have a very deep defense with prospects and guys that can play. We're solid in goal. We're not, I don't think we compromised anything by doing what we did, but we also told our coaches and our players and our fans that we're in it to win now and we're in it to win in the future. So we didn't compromise anything, I don't think. Certainly some talent went the other way, but we can do that. We have the pieces to be able to do that right now. And you got to give to get to improve certain areas of your franchise. With us, it's, you know, if you talked to me a month and a half, 2 months ago, I would have said, geez, no chance of doing anything because we're probably going to draft number one or number two. But this whole complexion of everything has changed. And we've played hard. So this team, the way they've played, the professionalism they've shown, the coaches, the way they've pushed, they deserved something. And this is an excited group right now. Whether we make the playoffs, I don't know. There's a lot of good teams right there. There's going to be good teams not make it. But I don't think we've compromised anything. We still kept our draft picks. We even if we don't make the playoffs, there's young players on this team and a lot of them that are going to be in a playoff drive, which is good experience, real good experience, instead of just getting through the season. So it's all, from my point of view, on the positive side of things right now.
John, and let me ask you one final one from this microphone. The draft's certainly on the horizon this year in New Jersey. How do you characterize this year's first round? We all know about Seth Jones. We know about Drouin and McKinnon and Barkov and Nichushkin. But how do you characterize sort of where the drop-off points are through the first round?
I don't know yet. We haven't had our final meetings. We'll have those in early June. But obviously, there's some very good top-end players. And then when it drops off some, there's a deep list of players that are at the next level. So that's, I think, what they mean by a deep draft this year. You're not going to go 25 deep and have all A-plus players for the NHL. It's impossible. But you've got some very good top end. Then when it drops off a little bit, that next grouping is much longer than normal, from what I've been told by our guys. I've seen quite a few of the kids play, and it's an exciting time, especially when you sit there like Calgary and us with three apiece. It should be good.
Well, John, thanks for making some time for us today. I know you're like the pretty girl at the dance. You're very busy. And we will go from there. Good luck. Good luck. Hopefully these moves work out for you, and we get you guys in the playoffs this year.
I appreciate it. Take care. Thank you.
John Davidson.
John Davidson.
We unabashedly wave the pom-poms for the Blue Jackets to make the playoffs this year.
Fun team. Surprise team. I had them 15th in the conference, and I'm not the only one who had that. You know, every year there's, I've talked about this on the podcast countless times. There's just teams that you want to see do well, and it changes from year to year. This year I'm loving watching Anaheim play, but I'm kind of pulling for the Blue Jackets to do something because every single person wrote these guys off. They were married to, the only question about the Blue Jackets was whether they were going to select Seth Jones and Nathan MacKinnon or Jonathan Drouin. That was the only question we had about the Columbus Blue Jackets, but good for them. Great coaching staff, hardworking players.
The bizarreness of those trades yesterday, we didn't really get into it with JD, but I mean, think about this for a second. The Rangers and Blue Jackets make an epic deal for Rick Nash last summer, right?
Yep.
And now there's an epic trade the other way to get Marian Gaborik. And Lozo's got a breakdown on NHL.com of what these two teams look like after these trades and what the totality of the trade is. It's remarkable if you take them both and combine them. But the other aspect of this thing is, and this wasn't JD's regime, this was the Scott Housen regime. Bobrovsky leaves the Flyers, okay, becomes a stud goalie for Columbus, allowing them to trade Steve Mason to the Flyers as their backup. Mm. In both cases, there it's this weird cyclical thing that happened, connecting stuff that Scott Housen did with stuff that that Kekalainen's doing, and it's like it's almost like trying to, I don't know, reset the clock, bring it full circle.
That is, and that's why I asked the question about the trading partner, specifically the New York Rangers. Once there's divisional realignment in the NHL, i.e., next year, is that done? Are they done trading with one another?
Boy, how many East-West trades did we see yesterday? By the way, right?
Yeah, there were tons.
A ton.
There was tons, and that's why I say now, when everything gets realigned, it's gonna be you're shutting down a lot of trading partners. Hmm. When everything realigns next year, you could be.
You want to hear some Shea Weber quotes on Martin Irat?
Well, did he bury him, or did he give him a nice?
This
farewell?
Is from Smashville 24/7, just published here by Ryan Porth. Was Irat's trade request a surprise to you? No, that's his personal choice. Obviously, we're moving on without him. As one of the alternate captains, how does his departure affect the team? He's definitely a guy we're going to miss. We've got guys in here that are going to need to step up, and I think that's the case all the time. We have injuries and need guys to step up. It's even more important right now. His trade request, was it something you guys knew about before yesterday? No. Your agent mentioned last summer that you don't necessarily want to be around here for a rebuilding situation. With Marty going, does that qualify as more of a rebuilding situation? No, we're in a playoff race and we're in it until the end. I think there are other teams that are right there that are trading guys as well, and they're still winning. And I don't think that's the case at all. Irat. Interesting. What's it like for Irat not to be here anymore? I don't think it's any different. Obviously, if you don't see a guy right away, it's not going to kick in, but maybe further down the road. It's not like he died or anything. He's still going to be around the leagues. We're going to see a lot of him. Boy, it sounds as though the captain is not very pleased with the trade request from Martin Irat that necessitated his dealing to the Capitals. Interesting debate, by the way, about that trade. Interesting debate about that trade, about the Capitals and Irat. Now, I'll give JP from Japers Rink credit for opening my eyes to this possibility. You can look at that trade as adding a top six forward, which Irat is, even though I don't think he's necessarily starting in their top six. I think he's on a line with Joel Ward right now. He's a top six talent that you got without surrendering anybody from your roster. And anytime you can do that, it's usually a good thing, right?
Yes, but...
Okay, but you gave up a blue chip prospect. Now...
Yes.
The Philip Forsberg thing is very problematic and shocked the hell out of people yesterday. But aren't we to assume, Jeff Merrick, aren't we to assume that George McPhee knows his talent pool better than we do? Aren't we to assume that he has a better grasp of the players who will become star players than we do and is comfortable making this trade and not having it be the Marcus Naslin trade for the next generation?
Here's my barometer for that. When we found out about the Irat trade yesterday, we were a couple of minutes before going on air with another one of the general managers panels. So it was like Pat Quinn was in there. I think Doug was still there, McLean, Mike Keenan, Neil Smith, Brian Lawton. Like the GMs are sitting around talking like GMs about GM issues. And I think it was Doug had on his BlackBerry, hey, Irat just got moved from Nashville to Washington. And we're like, well, what are they getting back? And he said, Forsberg. And he said, no, that must be a mistake. There's no way McPhee would let go of Forsberg for Martin Irat. And everyone kind of like, yeah, that's got to be wrong. So we just sat and waited for, you know, that correction on that trade because it couldn't have been Forsberg. I was shocked. They were all shocked. I think we're all shocked that they let go of Philip Forsberg unless Greg Wyshynski. That was a case where the owner said, George, we are making the playoffs. Alexander Ovechkin is playing like Alexander Ovechkin again, and we are going to ride the coattails of that Russian sniper. Do whatever it takes. Well, Ted, it might mean letting go of a blue chip prospect. Fine, make sure it's not the Russian, i.e. Yevgeny Kuznetsov. Well, we have that Swedish kid we drafted in the first round. Yeah, fine him. Let him go. We need some top six help right now. Like, wasn't that an indication that the Washington Capitals are under tremendous pressure right now to make the playoffs this season? Future be damned.
Yes. Within and future of George McPhee being damned if they don't make it.
Bingo.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's a trade for now. And it was I did DC radio before, and they asked me if it was a desperate trade, and it depends on how you define desperate. I mean, is George McPhee desperate to keep his job? Yes. So in that aspect, it's a desperate trade. Question is, you know, you're dealing a chip like that, you get somebody better than Erat, you think? I mean, Erat's top six, but he's on the lower end of six. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. If there are those that, I remember when Dion Phaneuf was moved, and it was honestly, it was like a conversation only between Brian Burke and Daryl Sutter. And when everyone looked at what Calgary got for Dion Phaneuf, there were a lot of general managers that said, I could have done way better than that if I knew the player was in play. Like you wonder if anyone around the NHL, other than David Poile and his conversations with George McPhee, if anybody else knew that Philip Forsberg was available. Because with all due respect to Martin Erat, I still think he could have done better if you're dangling someone like Philip Forsberg. And who knows? Philip Forsberg hasn't played a game in the NHL, so it's all speculation. But when you look at, well, when you look at the skill set and what he did at the U-20s and the U-18s and playing with Leksand, jeez, this David Poile may have, that may be, you're right. I don't know if I'd call it the Marcus Naslund and Alexander Stoyanov example, but this could be this trade could be a heist for the Nashville Predators.
Could be one that we look back on and say,
yep,
what were they thinking? That said, I mean, the basic problem with the Capitals throughout this year has been the totality of their offense and their offensive depth, and this improves it. It improves it in a big way. I like Erat. I like Erat a lot, and I think he's one of these guys who can create his own offense, which is something that Capitals roster could use more of. In fact, you know, one of those guys they never replaced in Semin. He's not a replacement for Semin, but he can kind of do the same thing. So, you know, it's good times. Speaking of trades, in this case, ones that did not happen, Mika Kiprusoff decides not to go to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Roberto Luongo nearly goes to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but then does not. Let's start with Kiprusoff. I never thought that the Leafs' interest in Kiprusoff was that genuine. I always thought he was option B for Luongo, but the Leafs seemed to indicate he was option A. They had a deal in place, and he decided not to go because his heart's not in it.
Yeah, listen, Kiprios talked about this and broke the story a couple of weeks ago. He's going to play out the remainder of this year, and then we're never going to hear from him again. We're never going to see Mika Kiprusoff again. He's done. He's going to play another, what was it, 11 games that the Flames have? And then that's it. He's vanishing. We're just going to talk about Mika Kiprusoff as, hey, remember that great Finnish goaltender Calgary had for so long and they couldn't get a Stanley Cup with him? Yeah, he's gone. He's been, you know, consistent all the way through. He's done. He's not coming back for the buck and a half. No way.
Then you had Luongo pulled from the ice.
Oh, boy.
Trade was close. Canucks asking for Scrivens and some picks. Here we go. They can ask him to wave it. He's going to do it. His hand has dropped twice. His hand is in the air a third time. It's nearly down
on
the canvas. It's falling.
There's going to be a new champion.
Wait. Oh, he lifted his hand up. He hasn't fallen asleep in the sleeper hold. The million-dollar dream didn't work.
He's wagging his finger in the ref's face. No, no, no.
It came close, but in the end, no deal between the Leafs and the Canucks, leading then to the Roberto Luongo pity party. Afterwards, before we get to Luongo, the question that's being asked all over this fair city today, the fact that the Kiprusoff and Luongo deals are so public, what does that mean for the Leafs goaltenders who are still here, who are the ones who have done all of the heavy lifting and gotten this team into a playoff spot this year, and who now know we're going to be replaced by a veteran ringer yesterday if Dave Donis could have gotten it done?
It's interesting comments from James Reimer yesterday, or is it 2 days ago? He was asked if, you know, the Luongo rumors and the Kiprusoff rumors are a distraction. He quite bluntly said, yeah, of course they're a distraction. The silver lining is at least we're not playing today, or else it would be a distraction going into the game. It's part of professional sports. Every player lives with that quote unquote distraction and that threat of losing their job to someone else, whether you're a left defenseman or a right winger or a centerman or a coach. That's the reality of this industry. So I don't think, you know, knowing the James Reimer a little bit, I don't think that this harms his psyche at all. This is just a reminder that hockey is a business. And by the time you make it to the NHL, doesn't everyone kind of, you know, already understand that?
Yeah, you'd expect
you know,
that.
I mean, you think to yourself like, oh, wow, this must be horrible for James Reimer. He knows about it. He knows this is a reality.
He's a big boy.
He's got big boy pants on. He's not wearing, you know, baby diarrhea pants. He's got the big boy pants on. He's wearing the glacier.
Baby diarrhea blogger pants.
Yes.
That's right. No, he's got the big boy pants on. He's MSM. He's MSP, mainstream player.
The Luongo pity party. Now, I wrote about it on Puck Daddy this morning, angering a lot of Canucks fans, but also enlightening some of them. I understand why you hold the press conference. You have to. You're going to get asked all about it. So get it all out of the way. But am I the asshole here that I don't feel the same level of sympathy for a guy who can, with the drop of a trade clause, go anywhere he wants to start in the National Hockey League?
Yeah. He wants to decide where he plays. You can do that if you just sign a short-term contract and become an unrestricted free agent. Go wherever you want, whichever market wants you.
I like Luongo a lot. And what he did yesterday was admirable. He was great. My contract sucks was a very funny line. Like, who doesn't love him at this point? You're rooting for him at this point. But
no.
I'm going to try to draw this example as best I can, this comparison as best I can. The whole I would scrap the rest of my contract to play again thing is so reminiscent of the guy who wins the lottery and then says, I'm just going to give up all the trappings in life and go live in a cabin somewhere. Like, you can afford to do that because you won the lottery. If you're Luongo, you can look at $40 million over the next 9 years and say, you know what? I've made $53 million since 2005. I can say this and be okay about it. It's a decision that not everybody can make. You know what I mean? And so I found it to be admirable from a competitive, I want to play hockey standpoint. God knows the guy wants to play hockey. He wears his heart on his sleeve about playing hockey. But, I mean, come on, man. It's like at some point you got to stop crying about the ditch and look at your hand where the shovel is. You put yourself in the situation. You knew signing a 12-year contract and with a no-trade clause, the possibility of you ever leaving Vancouver was nil. That's why you signed it. You wanted to handcuff them and make sure they couldn't trade you. And now look what you got. There, you handcuffed them. They can't trade you.
But this is going to end in July, though, Craig. This will end. Because just buying out, you know, Keith Ballard and David Booth isn't going to get it done. They have $62 million committed to 14 players. Cap is at 64. Like right now, they got about $1.5 million to deal with. They'll buy themselves $8 million of cap space with Ballard and Booth with those two buyouts. We still need to make a decision on Luongo.
Yeah.
And I know it's a tough sell if you're the general manager to go into the owner and say, we goofed on the Luongo deal and it's going to cost you, what is it, Wish, like $25 million to fix it? We need you to spiff a check so we can become cap compliant. But nonetheless, that's the uncomfortable conversation that's going to have to happen unless they can deal him at the draft or unless they can deal him in July. But this is coming to an end with Luongo in Vancouver.
And
it has to.
Again, I put most of the blame on him. I do acknowledge the fact that the goaltending market has changed. I do acknowledge the fact that the CBA makes that contract even worse than it already is as far as teams wanted to take it on. But,
yeah,
I mean, dude, like, if you got a chance at Roberto Luongo or Ryan Miller this summer, you're going for Miller 10 times out of 10, aren't you?
Are you thinking that Ryan Miller may not be traded now because he didn't go at deadline?
No, I still think he'll move. It depends. It depends on what they want to do. I mean, it looks like they're in full rebuild mode with the way they're stockpiling picks, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, we'll see. I don't think Matt Hackett's starting next year. They'll have to address that position probably if they do trade Miller, but we'll see.
He's a good goalie, man. I like Matt Hackett.
Yeah, but they didn't get the best goalie. They didn't get the best goalie prospect.
What, Darcy Kemper?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Kemper is the guy that I would have gotten out of deal. But Hackett's a good return. Good return. We'll get to winners and losers in a second. Karen Douglas writes in, speaking of big boy pants for Wyshynski, is it because he looks like Big Boy? And she tweeted a picture of the Bob's Big Boy statue. Now, listen. There's a number of different options for who Wish looks like. I look like Bob's Big Boy. I look like a skinnier Patton Oswalt. But if we can just kind of steer the conversation closer to people that, I don't know, might get laid. Jimmy Kimmel, I got yesterday from being on the air. He gets laid.
Jimmy Kimmel, really?
He gets laid.
Yeah.
The one that I'm going to go for, the operative theory on who I look like that I'm going to go with, and I got it from the makeup ladies at Sports Night yesterday, is Topher Grace. Now, Topher Grace probably could pull a pretty good amount of ass, don't you think?
Probably.
So we'll go with Topher Grace. Now, he ain't Ashton Kutcher, but he's Topher Grace.
You actually got a really nice compliment yesterday from Deb Berman, our stylist.
When she
said, correct me if I'm wrong, who said when she was trying to get you into a new pair of pants, you're about a what, 32 waist?
Oh, Jesus.
That's a good one, eh, Wish?
It's a great one, but I question her eyesight after that. her grasp of the metric system. But yeah, let's go with Topher Grace. I will acknowledge I look like a skinny Patton Oswalt and that I also look like Bob's Big Boy, but I'm going to go with Topher Grace. Winners and losers at the deadline. Keith Hagel writes in, biggest winner, Greg Wyshynski. How many people honestly have the entire internet talking about their pants for as long as it did? A very good point, Keith, but as you know, it's because there was F-all that was going on at the trade deadline at that point. The biggest loser missed my wallet, as now I have to buy a Yager Bruins jersey. Oh, Keith, just like the good Bostonian fan you are, running out and getting the new jersey for the new player in town that'll be there for a scant few games.
Stephen O. writes in. Thanks to the Twitter account.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, it was awesome, right? That Twitter account? Coffee jerseys? Stephen O. writes in, winner Columbus, the Gabrick trade was good, and I feel like the Como deal, which we didn't even talk about, was solid. Loser, yeah. Columbus, even though they retained all three of their first, none of them will be first overall again. Other loser, Washington, while the Erat trade could work out, I still can't justify trading Forsberg after he's had such a great year in Sweden and a good World Juniors. Plus, he does a pretty mean Gangnam style. I never saw that video, I don't think.
No, I never saw that one. Not with with Forsberg.
Keith Cosmel.
Hey, listen, too, about the idea of, oh, it's not going to be a first overall, it's not going to be a first or second overall pick. There is still plenty of excellent, and listen, and we're projecting on 18-year-old hockey players. The fact that they have three in the first round, you're going to land on a gold mine with one of them. That's just the odds. You know, unless you're the Maple Leafs, who one year drafted, you know, three Belleville Bulls, like the travel budget for the Maple Leafs only extended as far as Belleville.
Yeah, who's the GM
drive on the 404? I don't know.
It was Gord Stellick.
I know it was. Of course it was. We're only letting people scout within 200 miles of the Maple Leaf Gardens. That's all we have budget for.
Keith Cosmel writes in from Chicago. I want to say that the winner goes to the Rangers simply because of the beatdown from last night, but win or lose, they made some good moves that will definitely benefit the team. Biggest loser, I say, has to go to San Jose just because I can't stand Rafi Torres, and yes, I'm okay with being biased. See, I think the Sharks did really well, actually. They picked up some good draft picks from Murray. And the Torres move was a nice little depth move for them. I thought they did well, actually. Yeah. And the of course, the Klo trade, too. I mean, they picked up a ton of picks for the Klo trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they got two slow players out of their lineup. That's what they did. They got Douglas Murray and Ryan Klo out of their lineup. And it wasn't working with Ryan Klo in San Jose.
Nope.
Probably because of the Thornton thing.
Andy Yang, winner, Pittsburgh, because I haven't heard enough about the Penguins since I live in Colorado. Loser, Rick Nash, for having to play with the Blue Jackets teammates he tried to leave.
That's funny.
Out of the playoffs and playing with Blue Jackets. It's like
why
a Twilight,
do you
like a Twilight Zone
why
episode.
Why do you people keep following me?
Matt Dillon. Matt Dillon from St. Paul, Minnesota, who I believe was a game show contestant for us, right?
Oh, nice.
The Wild have to be the biggest losers, in my opinion. Giving up a first, a second, and a top goalie and a forward prospect for Pominville are not only overpaying, but it's filling the wrong need. Sure, every team could use some more scoring punch, but the Wild have a much bigger need on the blue line. They addressed the wrong need and overpaid for it. And yes, I know that they have a lot of up-and-coming guys they aren't going to have room for, but giving up that much for scoring help is a bad deal. The only thing I'll say about that, besides that he's right positionally where the needs are on that team, I will say that they're dealing from a position of strength. They can give away the two players that they gave away in that deal, but the picks are a little bit pushing it towards an overpayment for Pominville.
Let's see. You have Granlund, you have Coyle, you got Brodin. I mean, there's a nice sort of core of young hockey players there. I'm, you know, never a big fan of letting go of first round picks, but if you're going to get a player like Jason Pominville, you think you have a shot this year, maybe to win your division, do something in the playoffs. You want to bring in a veteran guy, someone who is, as you point out, Greg, was not part of the problem You could do a lot worse than picking up Jason Pominville. And if it costs your first round pick in the package, so be it. Guy can still rock it in 30.
Michael Perino, who hated my Luongo article but still wrote in another question, because we're boys, writes in, the winner is Tortorella. Regardless of whether Brassard, Dorsett, and Moore are actually are as good as Gabrick, this shows that management is completely behind Torts and is willing to sell top-end talent who wasn't willing to buy into Torts' system for guys who want to play in the Rangers system. Also, Rangers beat writers have suggested that Dorsett may be back by the end of the season. So, yeah, that's a great point by Perino, actually, about the vote of confidence coming down the pike for Tortorella.
When have you seen this in hockey? It's very rare. Superstar player, big-ticket player, at loggerheads with his head coach. How many times does the coach win that battle, Wish?
Not very often.
Almost never.
Yeah.
Yesterday, that was the coach winning. That's rare.
Phil Lombardi writes in, for my money, you look like Jason Bateman. I take that, too. Arrested Development coming back very soon on Netflix. And I'm very excited about that.
Were you surprised at all the tweets we got yesterday saying, oh, that's what you look like?
Well, it's because my avatar on Twitter is from Mystery Science Theater. They all think I look like Joel Hodgson.
Everyone thinks that that's you.
Yeah,
you know that,
me.
Right?
Me and my puppets. My puppet friends.
You just hang out with.
Just hang out with puppets. Tom Mannington writes in, the winner is Columbus for the proverbial slap in the face to the hockey old boys club that is Jarr, their Finnish GM, whose name I can neither pronounce
Jarmo
or spell without
Galanen.
Looking it up. More Finnish GMs and John Davidsons in the league, please. Brian Trottier, random penguin.
You watch where Kekalainen shines more than anywhere else, and I'm positive.
Go ahead and say European scouting. Are you going to say European scouting?
No, not European scouting, just scouting in general. I'm not saying European scouting. Hello, man. Berglund, Tarasenko, he made some nice picks for St. Louis.
I just love the idea of there not being somebody in the league who's just like, hey, Garko, it's me, Jarmo. You want to come play in Columbus? Yeah? Fantastic. Because we're Finnish boys, you know. And us Finnish boys, we need to stick together, right? Okay, bye, Garko.
The Finnish Pied Piper, bringing all the Euros to Columbus. Is that how you think what Kekalainen is?
Why did you decide to sign in Columbus, Jarkko? Oh, because Jarmo's there. And you know us Finnish boys, we got to stick together, right? Come on, Timo.
This is another impression you're adding.
Yeah,
adding
no,
to
I
your,
did. I do a wicked Finland
arsenal?
Impression, did you?
No, I didn't even know that there was a Finland impression to do.
You want to hear my Swedish impression?
Oh, is it going to be the chef from Muppets?
Hey, Mats, it's me, Mats. You want to come play for my
impression.
Team?
That's my Swedish impression.
So what you really have is just a Scandinavian impression.
You want to hear my Denmark impression? Hey, Sven, it's me, Sven. Hey, you want to come play for my team? What do you say? We're boys, right? We're from Denmark.
let's hear your Norway impression now.
Unfortunately, hey, I don't have a cliched first name for Norway. Oh, wait. Hold on. Yes, I do.
Of course you do. Do it.
What was the damn guy's name? I'm blanking on his name.
Vikingstad?
Right. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Vikingstad. Yeah.
Hey, Tor. It's me, Tor. Want to come play for my hockey teams? We're boys. We're from Norway.
Vikingstad. I forgot. I remember Vikingstad, but I forgot his first name. I still have my t-shirt, my Vikingstad t-shirt that somebody made for me.
Nice. You got one of those?
Yeah.
You got one of those in Vancouver?
Somebody made them for me.
Okay, so they weren't selling Vikingstad.
No. Well, yeah, no, somebody created it and then gave it to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A couple more of these before we say goodbye. Alex Loop, Random Penguin, Tim Horton. Hi, guys. First off, bravo to both of you on a wonderful job on Sportsnet. Wish looks nothing like I thought he would. I'm not sure what I had in my head, but he looked more like a well-groomed man-child, which is to say he looked younger than his age. I do. It's true.
You look young.
I do. I have a Trubinic face.
You look young.
I do.
Yeah. You look young.
I still get carded sometimes, even though I've got the Mr. Fantastic Gray on the sides. As for J.J. Merrick, he looked like the smallest man in the world sitting there with all those enforcers. Not only that, but like depth of field. You look sort of elfish, I think, when you're in the room with all the enforcers.
Well, because the damn table is so long.
Really
I'm
is.
Right at the head of it, and I don't have a one shot. It's all a five shot. Right,
and the
GMs.
Reason being, I'm not speaking out of turn here, but like I think Sportsnet trumps TSN in a lot of ways at deadline day. But TSN has magnificent tables. I mean, their tables.
Oh, are you kidding? They're gorgeous.
Their tables are amazing compared to ours.
Yeah, so beautiful set.
I think that they go overboard with your giant air hockey table to try to overcompensate for table envy with the TSN broadcast. Yeah.
They win the Academy Award for set design.
Yeah.
They really have beautiful sets.
I didn't even have gorgeous. A table at mine.
You stood.
That's true.
And
right?
You know what? I was glad that you picked up a tablet, too, because during your first hit, it really became obvious you didn't know what to do with your hands.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's weird, when you're on TV, like, well, these hands, I've had them your entire life. What do I do with them?
I did the entire segment with my iPad, thing. And I felt like I was from the future. I felt like I was, it's on Star Trek or something.
Let me ask you from a TV prop question.
Yeah.
Because now you're a mainstream TV guy. How did you decide on holding an iPad as opposed to just like holding a piece of paper, which is what, you know, most chimps like me would do?
Because there were a lot of moving parts in what we were doing, and I wanted to keep track of them.
Oh.
And also, I thought it would make me look like I was on Star Trek.
See, it makes you look like he's the guy from Digital. He's holding an
That's
iPad.
That's right.
It's like the old TV trick when you have a host who may not be the smartest person in the world, you put a bookshelf and books behind him or her
yep.
to draw the association between books and that person's brain.
Also, because I knew I was going to be part of the parade of Caucasian males with mobile devices, I wanted to make sure that my mobile device was larger than everybody else's to really, really stand out.
Yes, we all had mobile device envy. Was that your iPad? Did you hoard it from someone else?
That was
yours. Okay. Yeah.
Good
prop. That was a good prop.
Thank you. Jordan Parhar writes in from Cloverdale, BC. Biggest winner in what wasn't the busiest trade deadline day has to be the New York Rangers. Losing Press, Dubinsky, and Rupp in the past year changed the identity of a first place team they had last season under Tortorella, and these moves will help bring that identity back. That's not if that's your working theory on the trades they made, I agree with you. I think if nothing else, Prust makes this team tougher. I think Dorsett makes this team tougher. And then you got some other guys that are kind of thrown into the mix. And if you get anything out of Brassard, good on you, and more, who knows?
And Brassard needed a.
You think? Hey, let me ask you this. End of the day, who has the better career, Brassard? I'm sorry, Moore or Tim Erickson?
Tim Erickson.
Okay. Interesting. Finally, a couple more tweets here. Daniel Floyd, to me, how did you know us Finns sound like that? Spot on. Well, of course. I mean, I'm a master impressionist. Peter DeCarolis, until yesterday, I thought you had an upside down goalie cage stuck to your head, and you looked like Crow T. Robot. Nope, that is in fact a puppet. And finally, Brendan Moore writes in, I'd get a Dogovin's jersey before Jagr. That's a cup of coffee jersey in the making. I completely agree with that.
I hope Dogovin's works out. I really do. I don't want to see him do that shootout move for the Boston Bruins and then have everyone and then a reporter stick a microphone in David Krejci's face again and say, what do you think of that move now?
Yeah.
That's my hockey dream.
Final note of the day. Mark Edward Vlasic has been fined $8,378.38 for slashing Danny Heatley last night in a game. So if you haven't seen the incident, I don't think we had the video up on Puck Daddy today. Heatley gets cross-checked in the back, comes wildly swinging with his stick to hit Vlasic, who then reciprocates with a slash of his own on Heatley. Now, if you want to fine a guy a couple shekels, that's fine. I'm happy this wasn't a suspension. And I'm happy that there's no video, because this is one of those hockey things that happens. Like, save the videos for, you know, headshots and things like that we really need to understand. This is a slash. It happens. And it was a nasty little incident.
I missed it. I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
I kind of had a light night yesterday of hockey viewing.
There you go. All right, everybody.
I was exhausted yesterday. Jeez.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Mary Pruszynski here on a Thursday. Be back tomorrow for Game Show Friday and more fun and merriment. I am Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet back on the desk tonight with Brian Lawton for Hockey Central tonight. Players in their new uniforms. Ooh, I love it, eh? Are you the same way? Like, you get kind of like, oh, I can't wait to see what, you know, Ginla looks like in a Penguins.
There is a very good chance there might be a gallery of that on Puck Daddy at some point there.
I love that. It's seeing the New Jersey.
And seriously, like, thanks for all the kind words about me on TV and Merrick on TV. Because, like, you know, it's a long-ass day, and it's a lot of work to get that shit repaired. And I'm an amateur.
So anybody who said kind things about me, thank you yesterday. And the people who say that I'm awkward or that I look like a young Republican or that I should stick to blogging, that's fine too, because at least you've noticed me there.
Yeah, man. Hey, welcome to mainstream media. Welcome to it, Wish. You're now one of us.
I'm not. Stop saying
it. There's you, there's me, there's Kyprios, and, you know, other, you know, broadcasters in mainstream. Hey, you're just like, you and Mike Milbury now are colleagues.
I don't doubt that's the case.
Pierre Maguire, colleagues.
Yeah.
Welcome to the mainstream, buddy.
I think I really...
Took you a while to get here.
I mean, I think if anything, they've vacuumed and extended the red carpet for me at NBC. Mike Milbury skill yesterday. Jesus.
Yeah.
It's good times. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us for this episode. We'll
referred to as a CLM.
What is
career
it?
Limiting move. But it was good times.
I don't know, man. Yesterday. I think my stack rose here at Sportsnet.
Oh, that's true. Oh, are you kidding? They were loving you yesterday.
The scales
were loving
the
Milburys. It was awesome, man. Yeah, exactly. That's why, you know, Wish, I'm telling you. I know it's a tough decision, and you know you love being that outsider looking in, but you know I can get my real estate agent start looking at property here in Toronto in the outlying area for you.
Finally, from Postmark on Twitter, clearly I'm the winner, meaning me. Hmm. Wish you were the biggest winner since you got to visit your dad at work on school day. Also, the Wild did well.
Why do you keep calling your dad Gord? That's weird.
Yeah. All right. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Yeah. We just ran out of words.